Chop!
Chop! Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
Chop!
The game is over.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting podcast of Citizen Frame. You know, I let Trevor pick these next films because I'm a kind heart. Let's get that out of the way. I said, you know what? We'll do. And I knew even asking to pick three films, Wicker Man was going to be on the top list. I read reviews on it. I've never seen it. I've seen the Nicolas Cage one, which is terrible. And so I was just curious because this is like a 7.5 on IMDb. Beloved. It has rave reviews. No one really tried to touch it or do sequels to it. There's one called The Wicker Tree. I think the director tried to do some kind of different version of it.
The Wicker Tree's not very good at all.
Yeah. Well, it shows this man's talentless. So,
whoa.
He's a one-trick pony. He's a novelist. In his main career, he's a novelist. This is his first time directing. The man's name is Robin Hardy. He's a one-hit wonder. But yeah, you know, it's we talked about this with Hereditary, The Witch, even The Lighthouse. We talk about these occult kind of films. I don't know if The Lighthouse would be actually up there, but you know, Rosemary's Baby. You know, all these kind of films. The reason I think this movie, The Wicker Man, is successful is because it came out right at the right time, during a time where Hollywood was changing up gears and cinema was getting a little more darker and bleaker, with Rosemary's Baby leading the way, and then so forth, and Texas and Last House on the Left. These all came out, Exorcist, all these came out at the same time. So I think it landed at the right time. And everyone's really into these. And now to this day, there's a resurgence for this occult horror kind of stuff.
Like folk horror.
Folk horror. Okay, perfect. Like we mentioned with Eggers and so forth, these new directors who are going this route and fucking trees and fucking old people.
Mermaids. Don't forget the mermaids.
Oh, the mermaids. But I don't get it. So that's the problem I have. I don't like occult movies. I'm not into it. It's just stupid voodoo and worshiping pagan gods and all this crap. I'm not really, it's not my thing. So I wouldn't be fair to judge The Wicker Man. I'm going to be honest with you on that. Because I, from an outsider, I'm telling you now, this is one of the worst films I've ever seen. And I'm holding my cards to this. It is terrible. And I'm going to, and then this is me actually being serious. This is actually me being serious, folks. I need some guidance through this, please. I'm not going to go ape shit like The Lighthouse because that was just bullshit movie. This has something everyone is seeing but me. Okay? I mean, this is so fucking hokey and stupid. I was literally waiting for H&R Puffin stuff or the Teletubbies to show up.
I have some good news for you. I am here to be your guide, to be your Lord Summer's Isle, you know?
Oh, fuck me.
I will keep you right.
You mean Cher that's in this?
And explain to you the errors of your ways. I'm a complete opposite end of the spectrum here. This, to me, is one of the greatest British films and horror films ever made. I mean, technically, there's no supernatural elements in this film. Technically, you could argue that it's not even a horror film. But we'll get to it.
You know, the only kind of, I think, to me, cult films, movies about the occult, they're their best in the 80s. In the 80s, you had quite a bit of this. And it was more balls to the wall. But it was also, I might as well say it, they're a little more spoon-fed. Where these are like, what the fuck am I dreaming? What the fuck? You know, am I high? You know, which is definitely what this film is about or something. But we had Serpent in the Rainbow by Wes Craven, which is brilliant. You guys need to see it. We might get to it. And then The Believers with Martin Sheen. Those two films are really good, and they're scary and creepy.
Have you ever seen that one called, it's from around 1970, called Blood on Satan's Claw? It's a British one.
Heard of it, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would be part of that whole British tradition of what is now known as folk horror. It's more of, now the phrase folk horror is, it was coined more in more recent years by Mark Gatiss. So, but it's been around. I mean, you've like Witchfinder General with, you know, Vincent Price and stuff, and, you know, it's been around for quite a while, but, you know, it's only in recent years it's been known as folk horror. You know, you even have that Ari Aster film from a few years ago, which I did not like at all, Midsommar, which is, it's basically a remake, an inferior remake of The Wicker Man to me, but so the whole, but there's a long British tradition, even going back to the Hammers and stuff, of this, what is now known as folk horror.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's just jump into it and we'll see how.
See where you're wrong. Yeah, yes. Okay. Yes. No problem.
We've got the great, great Edward Woodward, who I like. I'm going to call him the Equalizer because I wish, yes, I was watching the Equalizer. So we'll call him that. Otherwise, he plays Sergeant Howdy, the great Christopher Lee. Lawrence Summers Isle, the beautiful, beautiful Britt Eklund, the Bond girl, who also was in the same film with Christopher Lee in James Bond.
Yes.
The Man with the Golden Gun. Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite Bonds.
Diane Salento, Miss Rose. You got Ingrid Pitt, beautiful librarian. Lindsay Kemp, yes, as Alder. And Aubrey Morris, the very disturbing and creepy gravedigger. Yeah. We open up in April 29th, Sunday, April 29th, 1973. Now, is Sergeant Howdy, he's not a priest or anything on the side. He's just giving a sermon. No. He's just helping.
No, he is a very straight-laced Protestant sort of Christian. Okay. So he's basically, you know, he would very much be that sort of strict Presbyterian type of Christian. And, you know, obviously that sets up the great conflict with the
Kagan. Yes. And of all the shit this film is, there is a jelly bean in it. Remember, I always say that you always try to find the jelly bean in the pieces of shit. You do, Trevor. Always those be bad movies. You always try to find some good silver lining.
The gold dust.
Yeah, I have maybe something. And it's that conflict, but we'll get to it. So
okay,
let's start off with the terrible, terrible music in this film. Wow, the plane sequence when he's flying, we get this terrible, terrible song called Corn Rigs or something. And it's like,
Corn
Rigs and Barley, Never Forget the Happy Night. I was like, what the fuck is this shit? This music.
Do you not think, though, that it adds to the complete weirdness? This is basically a musical.
Yes, it is. So that's what I was saying.
There's like 13 diegetic songs here within it.
And they're terrible. They're terrible.
Taylor Swift?
How can you sit there and watch this? Okay, I can see people getting enjoyment out of it because it is. I will say this. I was not bored. All right, so you got me there.
There you go. But yep.
How does people call this terrifying? How?
More disturbing than terrifying. Well, it's basically, the ending essentially, mm-hmm, and how it all sort of works out. But especially that absolute shocker of an ending, and it's totally anti-Hollywood ending, which we'll get to. But regarding the music, I mean, it is an acquired taste. I mean, I remember whenever last year there was a 50th anniversary screening of The Wicker Man that I went to see. I've seen it multiple times over the years, but I then reviewed it on my radio show, and I played some of this music on my radio show, and a lot of people were saying to me, you know, including my own mother, who was saying, awful music, you know, all that there. But, and I get that. It's not for everyone. It's not casual listening. But what I would say in terms
of listening.
Yeah, in context of the film, it adds to the general folky weirdness of it.
I just wanted to end my life. And then
you wanted to be burnt out of Wicker Man?
Yeah, I was the fucking Wicker Man. So you got these old bastards in the boatyard.
Yeah, the ferryman and stuff.
Yeah, and they're just being obnoxious. Here we are.
Sorry, the harbor master.
Trees and old people. Here we go.
Yeah.
And then you got the fucking corn rigs playing again. It wouldn't end. I mean, fucking hell. Stop with the music.
There's other songs come, but, you know, there's other belters of songs that come later on. You know? But the Maypole and stuff.
So he's there to find the missing child. And we all know it's a setup.
Yes.
She's never been Rowan missing. Morrison. They're there just to lure him. Why do they pick him?
Well, it's explained later on. Because basically due to their beliefs, whenever he's in the library reading about their beliefs, it's explained that they're basically, to have a bountiful harvest, they need a man who is a fool connected to royalty, i.e. the police, you know, Her Majesty's sort of police force, but also a fool, which he becomes during the May Day parade, but also, more importantly, a virgin, which goes back to his straight-laced. There's different versions of this film with additional scenes where there's these guys like making fun of him because basically that his wife, and he explains it himself later on, where he doesn't believe in sex before marriage, so he refuses to have sex with his wife. He's engaged, by the way, to be married, and so because of his strict Christian beliefs, he has, by his own choice, be a virgin. So it's basically, at the end, a virgin sacrifice. That is why he is lured, but also the whole sort of fool thing that he becomes in the parade. And also, you know, that there's like a man who would be king, but that's to do with him being part of Her Majesty's police force.
And so that explains the scene where the horrible scene where Brick, like Willow, is next door to his room slapping her ass and playing bongos in their ass, and he's trying not to be enticed over there.
Yes, he is. He's literally sweating, and he's tempted. He's so technically, tempted and stuff.
Willow's trying to save his life.
Yes, yeah, very much so. Yep, in a way, she's tempting him right to the brink of his basically dick. For want of a
been
better
in
word,
that room in 10 seconds.
Fucking tell me about it. You know what I mean? Oh, by the way, just a bit of a fact about it. That's actually, she was actually pregnant at the time, so that's actually an arse double for her.
Yeah. Either way, it was a stupid scene. But, okay, now it makes sense.
But a very erotic scene.
No, it wasn't. I was not. She's hot, but.
Okay, you're only after saying yourself you'd be in there in 10 seconds.
Well, it's pretty excellent. I mean, she's beautiful, but. That has something to do with the execution.
She ended up doing pantomime in Belfast.
What?
Britt Eklund ended up doing pantomime in Belfast in the Grand Opera House.
Wow. Great.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, then the music starts. And then we get this montage of him walking. So the owner of the, he goes to the Green Bar, or the Green Man Bar,
Yes.
And he walks in there and he's checking in because he's going to stay there and. Fucking music. Mm-hmm. I was like, am I watching MTV? What the fuck?
MTV is a little bit more rocky.
I was watching MTV.
I mean, if they played this on MTV, yeah. The Landlord's Daughter, and which is a really sort of creepy song, actually, in terms of, like, listen to them. You know, they're talking about how they all basically, and the landlord himself is singing it. So it's like they're all basically talking about how they've all had her and shagged her.
Yeah, I know. And there's even a scene where we're first introduced to Dracula, right? And he brings a little boy to Britt Eklund, Willow's window, and he goes to shag her.
Yes.
What the fuck, man? You think this is...
Yes.
And that's not what we're getting to, the children dance where the naked girls,
yeah.
And I mean girls, now obviously you can tell they're women playing the parts because they can't show naked girls, but they technically are supposed to be.
Yes.
Thankfully. I mean, this is pretty sick shit, dude. There's no way.
Well, it has its basis in sort of paganism, where from the sort of point of view of, and I'm not fucking defending it, by the way, from the point of view of this sort of pagan cult, it's all about basically sex and rebirth and nature and all this sort of thing. Even the stuff where they're talking in the school where the teacher's basically talking about the phallic symbols, and there's phallic symbols everywhere in this film. So there is, and the teacher's, Andy and Edward Woodward, bursts in and says that, I am going to report you to the proper authorities, you know, for basically teaching them smut in school. You know, but
he's right.
Yeah, I know, but it's in terms of the script, it's the conflict of straight-laced Christianity against sexual.
No, there's no okay. That's no against. That's my point. He is completely right.
Yeah, well,
this is illegal.
Yes, I know.
This is illegal. Yeah. If you at all root for these people,
yeah,
mm-hmm. I'm not rooting for them. Normal human being.
Yeah, I'm not rooting for them. I'm sort of. But, you know, Howie, because it's a brilliantly written and played character, is quite sort of, although you sort of agree with him, he's quite sort of, he wouldn't be great fun at a party, Howie.
He's a douche.
Yeah.
The character's unlikable.
Yes.
But that's one thing the film gets right.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Because I have nothing but respect for this character at his final.
Yes.
Which why.
Because he sticks to his guns the whole way
through. Yeah, there's a fucking scene where he's eating steak or something. And then there's these vegetables that look very sharp, you know, very clean and very vivid.
Yeah.
And the colors. And he says, well, raw beans don't usually have this natural color of turquoise.
Yes.
And Willow says something like, well, anything in their natural state have the vivid colors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The fuck?
Yeah. Yes. No, because they're obsessed with all of this, you know, the natural earth and everything that comes from the earth and rebirth and sex and all that sort of thing. But they've had a bad harvest the year before, so they're looking better sacrifices to their sun gods.
After listening to about 5 hours of horrible folk music and horrible food, he decides to go for a little walk. And what does he find, as you do in a graveyard? A bunch of people fucking.
Yes, and also there's like, women sitting naked on sort of tombstones and stuff.
Yeah, when in Rome, right?
Yeah.
Fucking stupid film. This is so stupid. I would have been out of there in 30 seconds.
But no, but because he's bound a duty to find this young girl or what he
believes. I know. And that's the character he's a stubborn prick himself. Yeah. So he's fucked because of his stubbornness.
Yes. Well, I mean, he even says it himself, what you're saying. There's several times in the film he says you're all crazy. You're all basically stark raving mad. You know, he says what you're saying, he's saying it himself, you know?
Whatever. I don't know.
Christopher Lee, by the way, considered whenever he was alive, he considered this his best work and best film.
Oh, this is stupid. This is his worst work. Well, I've seen a lot of Christopher Lee stuff, I swear to God. So pretty much, Dracula is a gigolo. That's how I know so far. And
what, a pimp?
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, he should have, like, you know, the big floral jackets and the big, you know, big high shoes, high boots, and with the cane, and the big fluffy hat.
Well, later on, he dresses as the sort of, you know, the man-woman thing. Yeah.
Just a share.
Yeah,
so sure. So we got Dracula and Cher. We got a gigolo, Dracula and Cher all in one. So it's morning time and Willow's all happy and I guess bet you she is. And of course, there's more music as he's doing his walkabout. And what the fuck is this? You got a bunch of fucking kids tied to a tree or something, and they're all dancing as this dork in the middle is like their teacher or something. And I mean, this is fucking my jaw was dropped at this point. I was like, what the fuck? How am I supposed to take this seriously? And yet I'm the odd man out here. Everyone else is seeing magic. You guys are seeing, oh, look at the mystical dance with the tree. And
No, I think it's more the sheer weirdness and the bonkersness of it that people are sort of taken aback by, whereas you are like, you're just hitting the floor. Because you, like you say, I think it's more from your American background as well. You're not,
it's very popular in the States. That has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You can't sit there and say Americans aren't going to get this. That's not right.
I'm saying maybe some don't. You know,
everyone in Britain, everyone in the United Kingdom, they all love it because they can relate.
No
way. Are you kidding me?
I think it's more that
actually, you know what? I'm glad if you think the U.S. don't get, they'll be like, what the fuck? And what's crazy Brits doing over there?
This type of folk weirdness is well, and paganism and stuff is well sort of embedded in sort of the history of the UK, you know, working back like, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of years. So people are quite sort of, they sort of know quite a bit about this type of thing in Britain. I'm not saying everyone, obviously, and the same with, you know, so coming in from an outsider's point of view, you will get people who'll say, what the fuck, you know, and that's okay. But, you know, and again, it's more the, for me, what the creepiness factor of this is just, the general weirdness and just the sort of bizarreness for me.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if gray fucking and.
I'm glad you got into that.
And cockroach torture. I'm glad you found something in this. Is that you found a good? Yeah, it's good, Trevor. Good for you.
Obviously, I'm not into it myself.
No. It's okay.
But there is a certain.
We'll just move on from that.
There is a certain element of British, and you know, not just British, Irish. I mean, all sort of countries and societies have their sort of folk type legends. You know, right across Europe and beyond, even you know, in Asia and stuff. So there is a historical context to all of this. Obviously, it's dramatized for the film and, you know, sort of ramped up. But yeah, I mean, there is some, I mean, there is a historical context to it all, but there's just a general weirdness and creepiness in terms of, if you do consider this a horror film, which to be honest, I do, even though there are no supernatural elements in it, this is part of the creepiness factor, all of this basically weird shit, and the songs add to that even more, just the sheer bizarreness.
The Equalizer finally tells what I wanted to tell these people since day one, to shut the fuck up. He goes to school, and he sees these little fucking asshole students, and the teacher's telling him about the dancing of the naked girls and shit. Oh, no, not yet. I don't think that's there yet. But
yes.
So
the phallic symbol, it's the phallic symbol she's talking about.
He finally goes off. You're all a bunch of fucking liars. Just shut up and listen to what I have to say, blah, blah. And here we go. The line that you must have had a hard on for. The one line you probably went, yes. This is what this is about. This is it. So when the librarian tells him, he mentions somebody's dead. I don't give a fuck who it is at this point. And she goes, whoa, we don't use the word dead. We believe life goes on into the trees. There you are. Trevor's probably eating.
Yes.
Trevor's probably having a nature.
A
soda pop and having some popcorn going, yes, it's all about the tree. Fucking hell.
It's in the trees.
We talked about this.
Trees.
And we've talked quite a few movies about trees, for fuck's sake.
Yes.
And the only one who's done it well to me is The Guardian. Remember that one? Remember that one we did? At least the tree did something. And it ate
people. Yes, I know. I was just thinking of that.
I don't care about sucking babies in and shit. That's fine.
Right.
Oh boy!
Technically, The Guardian is. I mean, we discussed this on the podcast for The Guardian, and technically, it could be considered folk horror as well.
Yeah, The Guardian. I would say that folk horror. Like I said, there's some good stuff out there. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this isn't one of them, but it's rare for this for me to get into this because it's just so fucking whack. It's wow,
right?
So he's after he confronts the school, he looks for his little walk and stops for a second, and as you do, you see a big-breasted woman breastfeeding her child holding an egg in her hand. That's standard practice. That's standard practice. You see that every day.
Yep. Adds to the weirdness.
Jesus.
Yep. Well, on Summer's Isle it is, yeah. Or Summer Isle, sorry, not Summer's Isle, Summer Isle.
You see that, how he makes a cross on the grave?
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. The Christianity thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice little touch, actually.
The one true God. As he says later on.
Yeah. They're pretty much killing him for tomatoes. Apples. They're killing him so they can have apples.
Yes, 100%. That's exactly true. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So they can have a more bountiful harvest because the harvest the year before was their worst on record.
Yeah, so you kill somebody so you can get better apples. Gotcha.
Yeah. Or do you like those apples?
And then Miss Morrison.
Mr. Equalizer.
And this is where it really gets fucking just fucking fuck me. And then they got the pharmacist, which has a jar of foreskins, as you do.
Yes.
Snake skins, brains, hearts, baby piglets. You've got Miss Morrison, who literally shoves a frog down a child's throat.
Yeah, I was just about to say it.
And removes it. What the fuck are you people watching that what are you guys seeing here? I don't...
Well, like I say, even, you know, Harry himself says, you know, you people are stark raving mad. It adds to the weirdness of it big time, you know?
Get out.
And it really makes you... It really sells the fact that these people are this bonkers pagan cult.
Yeah, and then he goes on a little fucking... We get the music's back on. Fuck me. Horn rigs and flowers and blah, 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 blah. I was like, Jesus, at least give us some Sabbath or something. So...
Any Alice Cooper?
Actually, that music will probably fit. Yeah, so he's doing the tour.
What about a Nightmare on Elm Street rap song, you know? Are you ready for Lord Summerisle?
Look, I'd take that. May as well. You guys, you know what? That rap song, we made fun of it, The Nightmare on Elm Street. But if it was in this, you'd be like, oh my God, I get it. I get it. No, you don't. People are trying to see something that's not there.
I disagree.
This guy is a one-hit wonder. Never made a film again.
Well, he did actually make a sequel to this, The Wicker Tree, yeah, which wasn't very good.
It was terrible. But that was like 40 years later. So
yeah, it was like 2002 or 2011 or something.
So, So this is where he sees the children, naked children, by the way, dancing around.
Dancing, is that Stonehenge?
What the fuck is Stonehenge doing here?
Well, here, on a side note, see the sort of, would you not agree that the actual island itself is stunningly beautiful, you know, just, you know, the nature of it and stuff. But I think that they picked the perfect sort of setting, you know, to film it.
I'm not here for a geography lesson.
Well, you should be, you know, because Lord Summerisle gives you one later. So he does.
So we finally get to the castle. We're going to finally see Dracula. You know, fuck
yes,
me.
In his cape.
Wow. And what a horrible wig.
It was the 70s, man. You know.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say the 70s thing again. You did that for Dead Zone. Yeah, this is where he finally says that this is disgraceful. You got children out there dancing naked and you're trying to get them pregnant. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm the Lord, and blah, blah. And then there's more fucking singing.
Yes.
There's really no dialogue here.
Well, a lot of the dialogue is actually in song, you know, or else it's Harry basically telling people off and shouting and calling them crazy and stuff. But, you know, Christopher Lee here then, as Lord Summerisle, he then explains how it was actually his great-grandfather who, back in the 1800s, actually came to the island and started up the cult, essentially.
Okay. So he decides he's going to leave. And...
Yes.
Dracula goes, oh, man, you're going to miss the May Day celebration. And he's like, I don't give a fuck.
Yes.
I don't care. You're a bunch of lunatics. And this is where we get the whole Willow trying to urge him to have some yum yum time.
Entice him.
So.
Yes. And he's really well played by Edward Woodward, actually. You know?
I might give it a pat. We might give it a plug. I'm trying to find something here. Let me think.
Yeah.
I'll say this. All the actors involved had balls to do this movie. I'll give them credit.
Right.
For willing to participate.
Edward Woodward, I think, is superb in it. I think he totally steals the show.
No, and that's my point. As bad as this film is, Christopher Lee breaks his A-game, and Edward Woodward breaks his A-game. Britt Eklund is just there for, come on, we know why.
She's dubbed as well, actually.
Is she?
Any dialogue that Willow says is not actually her saying it. It's dubbed.
Yeah, because she's... Where's she from?
She's Scandinavian.
Scandinavian. Oh, yeah. And Ingrid's the sweetest actress. She plays.
Oh, yeah, but she's using her real voice.
Yeah, you can tell. You can hear the accent.
Yes. Yes.
And listen, and everyone, how do I say? Everyone in this film is committed, even though how fucking batshit crazy it is. They're committed. No, kind of like Hereditary.
Yes.
Hereditary, you had Toni Collette's best performance of all time is in Hereditary. She should have got nominated for an Oscar. But that ending is so shit that it just destroyed it. So, but the acting was there. And this, the acting's there. Edward Woodward's a great actor. We all know that. So,
yeah.
And we all know how much we like Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
So I applaud them. I do applaud them. And to piggyback on, you know, about the scenery, that can't be accomplished without a good cinematographer. So they obviously hired the right man for that.
Yes.
All right, let's go back to tearing the party now.
No, I'm not tearing the party. You are.
So he decides he's done because he thinks the child is going to be sacrificed at this point. So he thinks the child's the sacrifice and not him. By the way,
he hasn't a clue about their plans for him still at this point.
Yeah, even though he's kind of stupid. I mean, he sabotages his plane. I would have taken a boat in 2 seconds to get out of there. You know, there's
he's not just stupid, he's also arrogant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What is that?
Did you find the scene really creepy where they've hijacked his plane and you see them peeking over the wall at him?
Yeah, and the fucking in stupid the animal masks. I thought that was stupid. Now, if this was done not for laughs, because this was done for laughs, right? This is not supposed to be.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, no.
This is played dead straight, this entire film. This is
a comedy, right?
It is. No. This is played dead straight from start to finish.
So this isn't a comedy.
I'm serious.
Oh, fuck. Of course it is. I am not taking
the
piss.
You're taking the piss. No.
I thought the whole thing was a comedy, and then the very end, they turn it up and kind of make it disturbing when he gets burned. So.
No. But, it does. It's certainly not a comedy, but it does sort of lure you into this sort of weird, bizarre world where you think they're just like sort of, they're a bit crazy. But then it takes a real dark edge with the finale.
With
a burn of alive, basically. You know? It's actually a really good sort of, you know, twist where you find out that, you see the girl, you know, about the caves and stuff, and she basically, she's in on it with them.
You said something, I can't remember what podcast it was, but once you know the twist, does this movie have any replay value?
It still
holds. How many times have you seen this film?
Oh, I would say a lot. You're talking double figures. Like, I don't know exactly, but it still has an extreme power, especially the finale for me. It's a completely anti-Hollywood finale. You know, there's no rescue. It's quite shocking. And
why are you disturbing. Saying anti-Hollywood? What is with you with anti-Hollywood?
If it had been a Hollywood film, no, I know. I'm not talking about all Hollywood films, but generally. There was no sort of helicopters there to save the day and rescue him. You know, there was no happy ending.
There's plenty of dark, disturbing.
I know that.
Midnight Cowboy, one of the most depressing films of all time, came out around the same time.
I know that, but I'm just saying in general terms, there's no Disney ending where it basically he gets rescued.
Yeah, because that never happens in English films. So gotcha.
Well, it's an extremely bleak and harrowing and shocking finale.
Because you've already taken me
out.
It
is to me.
Okay, so you got the parade, right? And he's dressed up as a gesture, whatever the fuck he is.
Yeah, that's where it becomes.
He becomes the clown, the Joker, yes. Yeah. And you have Cher there now. He's now Cher. The Lord is now Cher.
Yes.
And I'm waiting for him to, babe, I got you, babe, or something. But again, we got a musical, and we got the fake beheading, and then we got, you know, it just. And then he figures out it's a trap just to get him on those clips.
Yeah. It's his Admiral Akbar moment.
Now,
it's a trap.
You know,
yeah.
This is where the film gets a pass for me, and this is it. Otherwise, it's terrible. Is the character didn't break character.
He stuck to his guns.
He didn't beg for, please save me, I'll join your cult, like most of us probably would do. He didn't. This sounds great, guys. Let me go to the tree and dance around I'm up for that.
You want me to have sex with Willow?
Yeah.
You want me to have sex with Brett Eklund?
Oh, yeah. Well, that'd be easy. Actually, I would have failed that test. They'd be like, fuck, get him off the island, the horny bastard.
Yeah.
But I like his performance here, and I like how he
it's powerful.
He does not give up, and they have to, he's burning alive. He's praying for himself. So I like yeah,
look, he. Did you notice
what?
Sorry, did you notice as well that at the very beginning, certainly in most cuts of this film, he is reading Psalm 23, and then very ironically, he's also, when he's burning alive in the wicker man, he also returns to Psalm 23, and he's singing it, basically, or screaming it, you know. So I thought that was a very good touch. There's a certain irony about that, you know.
You got this moment where he's burning, and he's, you know, praying to himself and to God and so forth.
And yes.
What a better way to ruin the whole scene by breaking it into a fucking song again.
That again adds to the creepiness factor where they're all swinging their arms and dancing and singing, Christopher Lee's in a dress, and they're all happy. And it's a great sort of juxtapose where they're all happy and singing because they believe that in their brainwashed crazy minds that they're going to be now having apples. You know, apples are on the menu again.
I mean, that place better have some good fucking apple pie.
Right. But yeah, so they're sort of singing. They're all happy and singing and dancing and waving their arms. And meanwhile, Edward Woodward is being literally burnt alive.
I wish I was in there too with them. I'm not going to get this over with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly don't get it. I remember I texted you and I said, well, didn't I say something like, is this a,
yeah, is this a musical? Is this a comedy? We were like, yeah. I mean, you know what? You don't have to like it. You know what I mean? That's okay. You know what I mean? You know, each to their own. But I'm going back to Edward Woodward. I did like, and it's very in keeping with the character because he's so arrogant and quite pompous that he doesn't give in to them, you know, even if it means being burnt alive.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
Yep.
I have nothing else to add. I got nothing. I just want to go home.
Yeah,
I want to go watch Die Hard or something.
Well, you know, to me, it's, you know, yeah, it's crazy, but that's all part of the effect of it. You know, the whole bizarreness and the surrealness and the craziness of this cult. And that, to me, that makes it even more disturbing, especially whenever we get to the finale. To me, it is one of the greatest sort of horror films, but also British films. Not for everyone. Not everyone will like it, you know, and there's certainly sort of weird, creepy elements that if it was the real world, yes, indeed, certainly illegal and certainly totally, you know, unacceptable. But that just adds to the sort of insanity of this cult. And cults are insane, to be fair.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, okay.
Gosh, what's up next? Jesus, I almost want to put mine in there just to cleanse the palate.
to ensure for a brighter harvest on the next Citizen Frame.
Fuck me.
With lots of nice apples.
The next one up we're going to be doing is a little independent film, a revenge thriller, sort of, kind of. Can't remember it, but it does have Patty Constantine in it, who I really like. And it's going to be Dead Man's Shoes. So I think we'll get back to, I don't think there's any trees in this one, so it might be okay.
Well, it's very much a British sort of grim sort of, yeah. There's no cults, there's no trees, you know, sadly.
All right, so there you go. Well, that's why, that'll be the next one, and then I'll pepper one in to get, you know, put a smile on people's faces, and it's just enjoy listening to this rather than being depressed. All right, guys, the new issue of Phantasmagoria is out now. It's available on Amazon worldwide and Forbidden Planet locally here in Belfast and among other stores within the U.S.
Yep, our Hellraiser special.
Hellraiser special. Give us a shout if you want us. Whatever. If you love the Wicker Man or if you have my back on the Wicker Man. But, yeah, a lot of people like this piece of crap. So, good on you. To each their own. To each their own. Yeah, reach out to us at CitizenFrame_podcast on Instagram and, of course, on Facebook. We're going to end this one because this is Easter. And, oh, check this out, people. You probably listened to the last podcast, the Nightmare on Elm Street remake we did. That's right. We've upgraded the equipment.
Oh, yes.
So,
heart cooler way.
And that's right. It is a new editing thing or something that, yeah, that helps me edit and makes everything crisper and clearer. So you're welcome. We did that
there for you. Go. You.
All right. We're wrapping this one up. Have a good Easter. Take care of yourself.